This Tea Party rally in Medford, Oregon was one of hundreds taking place across America on Tax Day, April 15, 2009. The Tea Party movement became a fixture in the national media. But a more shocking voice was heard around the same time in Oregon, a voice that ultimately helped transform the state's tax system.
I wrote an op-ed, which was published 3 days before tax deadline last year, called I Want to Pay More Taxes. And the subtitle was, The Tax Code Divides Us into Haves and Have-Nots.
Jim McDermott is a Portland lawyer who went public in the Oregonian newspaper with his call to raise taxes on well-off people like himself.
I just feel that as a country, we're going in the wrong direction. We have the greatest economic inequality since the Great Depression, and the tax code is a big contributor to that. 30 years ago, I was working at a mobile station for minimum wage, and I was fortunate enough to get a number of government grants and student loans to go to college and ultimately to law school, and the government did right by me.
McDermott did more than just right. He joined a statewide campaign to raise taxes in Oregon, an effort to help close a $4 billion gap in its $15 billion budget. First passed by the state legislature, the tax hike was then backed by voters in a January referendum by an 8-point margin.
I think it was a momentous tax increase. We increased taxes on people who made a combined income over $250,000, and single taxpayers above $125,000 also increased the corporate minimum tax and generally increased taxes on affluent corporations.
Oregon, like other states, was facing a double whammy of lost tax revenue. With so many people out of work and spending less, the states are collecting fewer taxes. Meanwhile, more people need help from underfunded state programs. And unlike the federal government, states generally can't run deficits and need to balance their budgets every year or two, but they can face holes amounting to a third of their budgets. Chuck Sheketoff is executive director of the Oregon Center for Public Policy. He says the union-led Yes campaign that won the $1 billion tax hike was critical in closing the budget gap, along with $1 billion from federal recovery money and some $2 billion in cuts. And the movement raised key business taxes for the first time in more than 70 years.
On corporations, we raised our minimum tax, which was $10 a year, that two-thirds of Oregon's C corporations were paying since 1931, when it was last set at $10.
Measure 66 and 67 will protect the middle class and make the big corporations finally pay their fair share.
And in fact, one of our colleague organizations had a bumper sticker that said, I paid more for this bumper sticker than two-thirds of corporations pay in taxes. And they would charge $10.01 for it.
Vote yes on 66 and 67, because corporations getting away with paying $10 should be a thing of the past.
I think what's new is that people are understanding that the time has passed to be fighting amongst themselves for crumbs of a shrinking pie. It's time to make the pie bigger.
John Schur is deputy director of the State Fiscal Project at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities in Washington.
Well, there's a bunch of people across the country who I guess are quieter than the Tea Parties, but nonetheless pretty effective in revenue coalitions. People who are basically saying that in this crisis of a national recession, when people's needs are rising dramatically and state resources are shrinking, the answer is not to cut spending or to rely too heavily on cutting spending. The answer is a balanced approach that includes revenues. And they've had a lot of success around the country getting that not just on the table, but into the law.
All working families in North Carolina will feel the impact unless lawmakers adopt a wise, balanced approach that raises funds equitably. That's what we've been fighting for and what we will continue to demand throughout this budget process. Am I right?
Yes.
Say so!
30 states raised taxes to meet their 2010 budgets, five of them with targeted tax hikes on the wealthy. But unlike much of Oregon's tax increase, most of these tax hikes are temporary and expire after a year or two. The states were too optimistic about how much tax revenue they'd lose in the recession, so nonprofits and other community groups keep organizing.
So a lot of groups that never really got behind tax issues before are realizing that if they want to be able to provide the services and help the people that they're committed to, taxes have to be part of that equation. It tells you that, you know, again, despite the rhetoric of people who say, well, the last thing you do in a recession is raise taxes, people in their hearts and in their brains know that it's really a logical, rational approach proven throughout history that when needs are too great, if you only cut spending, you don't help people who are struggling in the moment, and you also threaten your state's economy because state and local government spending is a big driver of the national economy.
Phil Knight of Nike and the large businesses opposing the Oregon tax hike couldn't get a toehold with the public. Both moral and economic arguments were used against them.
We were handing out like candy a paper written by Joe Stiglitz, a Nobel Prize winning economist, and Peter Orszag, who is now Barack Obama's head of Office of Management and Budget. What they had written back in 2001 or 2002, a paper saying that the best option for a state facing a shortfall is to raise taxes on those with the greatest ability to pay instead of cutting services, because by raising the taxes on those with that great ability, you're not taking money out of spending, you're taking money out of savings.
For the first time, a majority of residents in some rural, conservative-leaning counties voted for a tax hike in Oregon. Marcy Westerling is director of the Rural Organizing Project, which campaigned for the ballot measures by engaging in tough conversations with neighbors.
So, you know, we've tried in rural communities to really look at accepting that, in fact, people should be angry over their tax dollars right now. Here in Oregon, they've been shifted so profoundly onto the shoulders of working class families that anyone in the working and middle class that is not angered by the amount of taxes that they're paying, by the lowered level of services they're receiving, is really not paying attention.
Long before the referendum, the Rural Organizing Project held tax salons, bringing together people with a range of politics.
What we started to do actually 5-7 years ago was bring people together over pizza using a cartoon that was a little bit alluring in terms of finding people who were angry about their taxes. And when we would pull people together and do that, we would find very easily that if they were given a chance to introduce themselves and to talk about their life situation, sure enough, they really were dependent on a better safety net. So their resentments were really based on that erosion of it and that sense that it really didn't include them.
The Rural Organizing Project takes on people's knee-jerk reaction against taxes.
They're asked to think about it in terms of their most recent, you know, wait in line at the Department of Motor Vehicles when they saw everything that they hated about government represented, because we really have shrunk government services so that we can almost guarantee dissatisfaction.
Westerling is bringing these strategies to partners in other rural states like Nebraska, Idaho, and Washington. And polls nationally show Oregon voters are not alone in supporting tax hikes on the wealthy. John Shore.
When you propose an income tax increase for people making $250,000 or more, you start to see support levels in the 60 and 70% range because people understand what's at stake.
In Alabama, a coalition of churches and advocacy groups has worked for years to lessen the state's harsh tax burden on the poor. Called Alabama Arise, they're trying to kill a 4% tax on groceries that hits low-income people hard. Instead, revenue would come from a tax hike on couples making over $200,000 a year. The group also takes on people's suspicion of government and taxes. They have no choice. Tom Dooley is board chair and also leads an inner-city mission of the Methodist Church in Birmingham.
Anytime you have an issue about taxes, there's a general mantra that people resort to. We don't want to raise anybody's taxes. And that usually gets played out without the details of what the plan would actually do and who would actually be positively or negatively affected by the plan. There, unfortunately, have been scandals both on the local level and on the state level from time to time. And it has left a bad taste and a lot of suspicion and distrust in people's minds.
Even though 96% of Alabamans would benefit, the campaign to lift the grocery tax is not a slam dunk. It requires a change in the state constitution. And despite the leadership of the Black Caucus and Budget Committee Chair, it lost a legislative effort to put the swap before voters in 2009. Kimball Forrester coordinates Alabama Arise. He says 2010 might be the year.
The number of states that still tax groceries has been dropping year after year. Just a few years ago, it was 8, and then it was 5, and then it was 3, and then Arkansas voted to cut its sales tax on groceries in half. That left the only states, Alabama and Mississippi, that are still taxing groceries fully.
Citizens for Tax Justice ranks Alabama as one of the 10 worst states in overburdening the poor and middle class.
Lower middle income Alabamians pay 10.5% of their incomes in state and local taxes. The top 1% pay 4% of their incomes in state and local taxes. So middle income families pay more than twice the share that's paid by the top earners.
The activists' faith guides them in their call to relieve the tax burden on the poor. Gwen Gray is a Presbyterian whose church is a member of Alabama Arise.
I mean, if you have resources and money and well connections, then you can do quite a bit. And, you know, we're all of God's children. And so are we our brother's keeper? Yes. And so when we can make a difference, we should.
Still, Tom Dooley says even some Christians disagree in this heavily conservative state.
There are people who don't necessarily see it that way, and there are Christian people who don't see the government as the rightful or the correct vehicle through which those sorts of concerns can be lived out.
Forrester says racism distorts the debate further, leading some white Alabamans to oppose lifting the grocery tax.
One myth that's out there is that white people are paying the property taxes and black people are paying the sales taxes. And so we've got to keep property taxes low and sales taxes high so that black people don't get off without paying. Now, that's just really a faulty assumption. The black home ownership rate in Alabama is very high, partly because our property is so cheap that a lot of people can afford it. But that's part of the mythology that keeps our attitudes towards sales taxes and property taxes the way they are.
In visits to congregations and community groups, the Multiracial Arise Coalition, like the Rural Organizing Project in Oregon, takes on voters' disconnect about what state taxes do and for whom.
The way we have learned to open our meetings is to help people connect with the issue. So we usually go around the room and have everybody say who you are, where you're from, and what is one thing that your taxes paid for in the last week that benefited you. And sometimes there'll be people in the meeting who can't think of a thing. They cannot think of a single thing that their tax dollars paid for that has an impact on their lives. And you have to say, well, how did you get here? What did you drive on? And, you know, then they, that's right. Tax dollars pay for roads. And that kind of gets that people thinking about it. But for an awful lot of people, you know, that you really have to draw the connection that our taxes have a purpose to create the common good. And they pay for parks and schools and healthcare and roads and a police force, troopers on the highway.
John Scher says groups like Arise are changing the debate about taxes, helping Americans see them in a fresh light.
Over half the states have coalitions like this. A couple that come to mind, there's a group called Together NC in North Carolina that has over 100 members, 100 organizations representing millions of people in the state. Last year, when the governor and the legislature said, we're going to solve this budget crisis without raising taxes, they changed the nature of the debate. The coalition actually won $1 billion in tax increases by educating the public and mobilizing.
But even this victory wasn't enough. North Carolina faces another $1.5 billion shortfall in its 2011 budget. The coalition met in March to figure out how to win the next round, targeting not just corporate tax loopholes, but also government waste. the struggle to change both the perception and the politics of taxes continues. This is Abby Scher for Making Contact. Well, you can tell them boys at the IRS, this old boy, Philip Hatter.